Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are having a conversation with someone who's no stranger to this platform. That is Fran Katsoudis, who is Executive Vice President and Chief People Policy and Purpose Officer over at Cisco. They are probably one of the biggest ICT and networking companies in the world. And I didn't know this until we actually sat down that Cisco is now 40 years old. So it is an interest. It is quite fortuitous that we're talking to Fran, at this time, and keen to get a sense of what's happening in the world of tech on the continent, but also more importantly, global tech, and how, you know, Cisco is hoping to bring some of that learnings, you know, continuously into the African continent. Fran, as always, greetings to you today.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you again.
Okay, so let's begin with a couple of the milestones. 40 years of Cisco, that's a long time. Like, but when you then look at the cohort of companies that, I guess, grew up around that time, they are all, you know, sort of reaching that 40, 50 year mark. I think the other day, I think it's Microsoft that's, you know, 50 and above. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Silicon Valley guys, it's quite interesting that, you know, we've got so many decades on us. So from that point of view, maybe we could reflect on one of the big things in this moment at 40, which is AI. Everyone and their cat is talking about AI, right? Right. From a Cisco point of view, how has it perhaps affected or influenced strategy, and how are you taking it into the different markets? Because, well, you guys operate in so many countries, it's not like there's a one size fits all, you know, type of approach that you can do so. And especially, you know, for yourself, where you have to be dealing with the actual people who for so long have felt threatened by some of these technologies.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So when I think about 40 years for Cisco, but for any company, what that means is that you are leading through, especially from a technology perspective, tremendous amount of change. And as new technologies emerge, really working to meet the needs of your customer. And what's so fascinating in the technology space is that it always feels like these technology shifts happen so quickly. And from an AI perspective, that's absolutely the case. And what I would say is that 2 or 3 years ago, I felt a lot of fear from our employees when we talked about AI. And I think that was because they knew what it was, but they didn't know what it would mean for the company or for their work. Yeah. And so I'll start first from a company perspective. We now understand that networking and connectivity is a critical element to enable AI. And when we look at AI infrastructure, it's exciting from a Cisco perspective because we're going to play a big role in building that infrastructure. And we also understand that the workloads create tremendous demand on the network as well. And so I think the first thing I would say is our people see that. And there's a lot of excitement about what that could be. And then you start to intersect AI and Gen AI into our collaboration suite and some of other technologies. And what our people see are some really cool use cases that make their lives easier. On the work side, it's a little bit more complex because what we recognize is that a large majority of our technical roles will shift over time because of Gen AI. And how we navigate and help our employees through that, how we act in a very transparent way, so that they see not only our approach, but some of the assumptions that we make, I think will be incredibly important.
Before we started, we were just, chatting about, the fact that, you know, you're a person who likes, you know, taking down notes and that type of thing. I tend to, sit and listen. I've found other people who, in meetings will sit and draw pictures, but they will capture everything that is, you know, happening in that session. Just curious to understand, for yourself, how are you using AI?
Yeah, so a few different ways. I think I started first with the easy stuff, which was the support from a communication perspective. Yeah. I had an experience early on where I was creating the structure for one of the boards that I'm on to do the CEO assessment. And I plugged in a few things that I wanted to embed into the assessment, and out came an amazing document. And the funniest thing about this was I felt a little bit of guilt initially, because I was like, is this okay that I did it this way? And so I would say early on, those were the easy use cases. Today, and at Cisco, we're doing some really interesting things where we're putting AI in the hands of our employees. So within my organization, 800 people volunteer to get trained on AI, and close to 700 of them actually received a green belt in AI, which is really cool. And then what we asked them to do was to focus on their day-to-day work and let us know how their work will change. And these are the types of use cases that, for me personally and for the organization, I think it's experimentation. And so I would say research, communication, even helping my parents use it for emails that they create, like little things like that have been really helpful.
Mm. And also tied to that, because you're talking about how employees, you know, they, that feedback loop of them telling you, you know, how it's working, all of that stuff. And I guess now we're over that mental, I'm going to call it a mental hump, where you're feeling threatened, but now you're like, okay, fine. This is actually going to be useful, and there's opportunity, you know, for the tech. When you're going around, you know, in your different travels, and now I'm shifting, you know, to Africa, what type of conversations are, you know, leaders having with you about AI, if at all?
Yeah, I think it's leaders are absolutely talking about it. And what I find here is probably aligned. We just did an AI readiness report, and it was really fascinating because we had done one a year ago. So it was kind of interesting to see what had changed and what had stayed the same. So what we saw in the readiness report, and I feel this on the African continent too, is that the majority of leaders feel some pressure to create those AI use cases and to partake. I don't think anyone wants to feel like their competition has an edge on either innovation or productivity. Yeah. In the readiness report, 98% of the participants said that they felt pressure to have a plan. What was so fascinating is that only 31% felt like they had the talent and the skills to do so. And so we see a huge gap there. And when we asked people, like, are you ready? Like, do you have a plan for the organization? We actually saw that number come down just a little bit. And so part of the reason that I'm here this week and part of the conversations that we'll have is there's a lot of important planning that we need to do from an AI perspective. I think there's a lot of important work to ensure that it's inclusive, to ensure that it's equitable, and that we put the guardrails in place that are ethical and keep people safe. And so I think as we figure out some of those use cases, establishing this really, I think, responsible foundation is critical. And that's a big part of what we'll be talking about this week.
You know, I want to see if there's any either parallels or linkages that can be drawn between the people part of your title and the purpose part of your title, because a big part of the, you know, the AI discussion has been that impact on people and all of that stuff. And at least we can hear that, you know, people are at least now a little bit more excited about AI, and, you know, you've taken, you know, part of the threat conversation, you know, out. And then interesting to hear some of that feedback 1 year later, you know, contrasting attitudes around AI readiness. The purpose piece, right? Because that's another part of that. How are all of these discussions affecting, you know, the purpose part, you know, of a portfolio? Yeah.
So I think success for us is when the purpose piece is embedded in both the people and the business discussions. I think it allows you to be a lot more strategic. Something that I've realized, and I didn't understand this in the beginning, was that when you talk about purpose, that is a long-term strategy. That is not your short-term, let's have it by next month type of an approach. Yeah. And I think it makes us look at opportunities in a different way. When I think about purpose and people as it relates to this conversation around AI, what it leads me to is conversations around inclusion, conversations around ensuring that everyone has access. A big part of the conversation is, how do we prepare people for change? And so, you know, as we touched on, people had a lot more fear when they didn't understand. But now that they do understand, it's going to require a different level of agility in how we look at our own development and learning. And some of the learnings that we had on the purpose side as it relates to digital skills are more applicable internally now than ever before. So if you think about something that we talked about before, like the Networking Academy, in the Networking Academy, we provide people with, in some cases, the minimum coursework that they require to get that first job. And then what happens is typically people get excited about the learning and then they continue to advance and get certifications. Internally within a company now, you almost have to have that same approach. If 60% of my job is changing, what is the you know, fewest number of courses that I need to be ready for that next thing so that I can make that skills jump, right? And so all of that to say, learnings from purpose come into the business and the reverse. Successes for us when we think about something like AI, thinking about it from the perspective of for all. And when you do that, I do think it shifts a little bit some of the priorities that you have.
I can only imagine a role such as yours where you're sort of trying to juggle, you know, all of this stuff in your head. And I'm keen to understand, you know, for yourself and your role, how have you found what you're doing on a daily basis? Perhaps shifting and changing, you know, over time. Pleasantly surprised that you're sitting and you're having time to play around with the different AI tools, you know, mm-hmm. teach your parents, all of that stuff, because there's also all of these bigger picture things. There's a difference between technically adept with the technology versus strategically understanding what the tech can do for us as an organization. So for yourself, how have you found, I guess, your role evolving over time in light of all that?
It's interesting because I think there's some things that evolve and there's some things that don't. The first is, I think you have to realize that there's never enough time. And so what that forces is a level of prioritization. And I think the clarity of understanding at any given moment, what are the most important things? And how do we sequence and how do we be thoughtful about it? I think that as I answer your question, I think you have to have really amazing people around you because you have to have the ability to know the things that you personally have to be engaged in. And those things that even if you don't want to, sometimes you have to let go, right? To have the impact. One of the questions that I like asking myself on a regular basis is like, what is your value at this moment? Yep. And what is your value to your team? What is your value to the work? And that guides a lot. And I guess the last thing I would say is that the learning, the experimentation, trying new things, the AI use cases, I think there's risk for us as leaders if we don't lean into that. Mm-hmm. And I think our people also need to see us experimenting and stumbling and making mistakes and trying new things.
No, it does make sense from that point of view because People do take their lead literally from their leaders, and especially the leader around what to prioritize, because how I've heard my many years in business school, they taught us that, well, the best thing you can do for yourself in an organization is to make those above you look as good as possible. So if you take the lead from what they're prioritizing, you know, then it sort of cascades down, even in a large organization, you know. And sometimes people wonder how certain thoughts diffuse in an organization. And I think, you know, that's, you know, part of the, I guess, part of the elements that go into, you know, something like that. Outside of purpose and your purpose report, you guys have also been doing some work around smart cities, you know, I believe. What's happening, you know, on that front? And I ask because, once again, this is one of those, I'm just going to call it a long tail type of discussion. It's not one of those things that one is able to implement in a short space of time.
For Cisco, and especially here on the continent, I would say that the investment in smart cities and digital projects is a priority. And in the last few years, we have really ramped up the digital projects that we're doing on the continent, which we're excited about. When we think about smart cities, in many cases, what we're looking at is how do we leverage technology to streamline government services and solutions? How do we address pain points like healthcare within a country or a community? The role of digital technology in streamlining the process of getting a driver's license and how you renew. I mean, these are some of the projects that we have, and they're all based off of this foundation of data and process. We today are running digital projects in over 50 countries. In many cases, we do this starting with the head of state. And the reason for that, and it's kind of funny because it reminds me of companies a little bit, is that when you start from a head of state perspective, the leader can set the tone that the organizations, that the ministries need to work together, because so many of the smart city projects, they cut across organizations. And I think that that type of work has been incredibly impactful. And so here on the continent, we have been leveraging our technology from a justice perspective, transportation perspective. I think there's huge work that we can do around how you digitize ports, as an example. We've been doing a lot from an education perspective. A lot of times that's just ensuring that schools are connected. And then we always pull through the digital skills element as well. But when you think about all of these things and you start to look at AI, what we see in cities around the world is AI being used to better manage traffic, as an example. I think we all need that.
I was about to say, Joburg needs that a lot, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You see use cases around AI and water, water usage, conservation. You see energy use cases as well. And so I think a smart city is one where we're able to digitize, to leverage AI, but most importantly, to do that, people have to be connected.
Tied to that is, and you started talking about it now, when you're talking about starting with, I guess, the head of state in a country, and then having that attitudes, you know, being pervasive in an organization, and then the different ministries that work together. Right now, when you think about smart city implementation and that type of thing, where are some of the biggest bottlenecks, as far as you can see, in terms of making things actually work and function the way that they're meant to?
So it won't surprise you, but the first is connectivity. Yeah. And if we focus on the African continent, we know that about 30% of the continent is connected in sub-Saharan Africa. And so you need to have that connection. You need to have the infrastructure, of course, Another bottleneck is the talent and the skills. And then in some cases, I would say, especially with so many of the projects and the impact on data, you want to have the regulation and the data privacy elements in place. And I would say those are some of the bottlenecks or opportunities, I think, as we move forward. Maybe the other thing I should say is that we have to make sure that with everything we do, it's secure. And I think there's a lot of risk as, you know, technologies are emerging, that we move so quickly that we don't put the safeguards in place to ensure that it's both connected and protected, which is a priority for us as well.
Very much so. And I want to go a little bit deeper into what you're saying about having those guardrails in place. How do you feel about the speed at which regulators are, I guess, dealing with technology now? Because there's always been that view that the technology runs ahead and then the regulators and policymakers sort of catch up, you know, over time. And especially now, obviously, when it comes to AI, we've started seeing a lot of action, you know, with different countries now thinking about, you know, AI governance. I think the EU has done some work around it. Other countries are still trying to grapple with what even the definitions, you know, of this stuff are. I'm just using AI because that's what people are talking about. But I guess the speed with which policymakers are actually dealing with, you know, technology evolution. As Cisco, you guys are probably at the cutting edge of a lot of, you know, some of this stuff. Yeah.
It's funny because when I talk to policymakers around the world, I think they would be the first to say that the tech is moving so fast. What I see that's a little bit different at the moment is that I think because with AI, there's opportunity, but there's also such significant risk. And there's a realization that if AI gets in the hands of the bad actors, that you could have issues. What I see is that policymakers are, one, engaging academia and the private sector to streamline some of the policy creation processes to make sure that it's inclusive. In the US, we have a AI Safety Council, and the council is focused on inclusion. It's focused on data privacy, and then it's focused on cybersecurity. I see those types of bodies forming around the world as well, which is, I think, really important. So they're bringing in the right players. And then I think they're realizing that they're going to have to take an approach of focusing on some of the bigger elements and then leveraging the private sector and local government to pick up a lot of the policy as well, that it's going to be a bit of a handhold because things are moving so quickly. I think all of us are learning a lot. I think we all believe that there has to be some level of regulatory protection at this moment.
And do you, I guess, in your own engagements, take a proactive approach, or do you almost, you know, take it as and when the regulators finally arrive at the party, you're almost there to welcome them, to say, welcome, yes.
I think it's a bit of both. Okay. I would love to say that we're proactive across the board. I think it's a bit of both. I think where we know that policy is being written, we try to engage so that we can plan, we can bring insights, we can bring data if helpful. Where we see risk when it doesn't exist, we're more reactive, but then elevating risk. I think at the moment, and even from a private sector perspective, we're partnering a lot more than we have in the past, because I think we know that there isn't one company that can solve this and that we have to work together. I think at this moment, whether we're talking about cyber or AI, those types of partnerships are important. In a perfect world, everybody isn't creating their own. That's very hard, I think, for companies and broader communities to navigate. And I think we could just be smarter with our time. But yeah, it's a little bit of both, I would say, today.
Okay, a little bit of both. Tied to the policy discussion is, you know, who are the policymakers there? And right now, we are talking at the tail end of 2024. It's been a huge election year around the world. I think we started off the year anticipating over 70 elections across the world. And it's been a tough time for incumbents. You know, around the world, we've seen, you know, shifts, you know, across the world in terms of, you know, people moving from, you know, incumbents being basically being booted out and then, you know, new people. There's a new administration coming in Cisco's home country, which is the United States. You know, feelings, position and posture, you know, around the new administration.
So, gosh, it has been a huge year for elections. And it's fascinating as a company to navigate that and to work, especially in the work that I do around the policy and purpose side of it, to work with new administrations and to see what is similar and what is different. And I think there's just a lot of listening and learning going on. I would say from a U.S. perspective, and it was funny, I was having dinner last night with some partners and friends, and we were saying that the period right before the election, there's always such uncertainty. And they were saying that it felt that way here in South Africa. And I would say the same was the case in the U.S. And we were laughing a little bit that it's a moment where everything is scary, you know, because the candidates are pointing out the risk. And so you live in this world of listening to all of the risks. I think there's a point once the election is closed and it, you know, it is in the U.S. where we start planning and we start working with the new administration and understanding the impact, understanding how we can be most effective, trying to understand, okay, exactly what will change. And so as a leadership team, as an example, we're meeting right now with the Trump advisors to understand that a bit more. In the U.S., the way that it works is we've had the election. Trump will step into office on the 20th of January. And so there's still a bit more time of planning. But I would say at this moment, some of the key careabouts that we've talked about in this conversation, we do believe will be careabouts for the new administration as well. And so security, cybersecurity, we know will be absolutely top of mind. And that's something where we've always worked with the government to just ensure that we drive the right level of awareness and protection.
To maybe come back to something that you said earlier on, that attitude that comes from the top, you know, as it pervades through a country, the economy, all of that stuff. How much, this is not necessarily about the Trump administration, but I guess just broadly, Cisco's relationship, you know, with the state, you know, to say how much of the state's policy on, let's say, Africa, you know, informs, you know, Cisco's relationship, or do you sort of move independently, you know, when you're thinking around, you know, that type of thing? Because we do see it sometimes, to your earlier point, companies will take the lead. Like, for example, I think U.S. companies have found themselves in a tough place because of the U.S.-China relations, right? That now informs how you engage with that region and all of that stuff. But when it comes to your strategy around Africa and your engagements with the state and all that,
yeah. It's funny. I think about this a lot because what you want as a company is you want to have the, of course, the clarity, the engagement, the strategy for what you do. Let's say, you know, within a country or within a continent. And then in a perfect world, you want the governments that you're dealing with to make it easy, to accelerate, to create momentum. And when you have that, it just allows you to go so much faster. And so I've been thinking a lot about, okay, like what momentum will we feel from some of the changes? What I know for sure, and I think about the role that I have today on the PAC DBIA, which is the President's Council on Doing Business in Africa, is that the companies that I work with, like Cisco, are so passionate about Africa and the opportunity here. And we're going to be running strategies here separate from the administration because it's the right thing for business. In my role, I would say it's also the right thing for communities and the world as well. And so what we're waiting to see is what is the policy, the engagement, the practices that perhaps could make it a bit easier, maybe even create incentives for some of the things that the government wants to create. And I just don't, we don't have a sense for that just yet. But I do think you're going to see companies committed to the strategies that exist today, which just make good sense.
All right. It certainly, I guess, you know, makes sense from that point of view, because I do believe personally in the Africa opportunity. So it would make business sense to, you know, invest and double down as much as possible. I think lastly, as we land, you know, this conversation, you know, your outlook for 2025, but more on a, what are you looking forward to do, you know, because, you know, I follow some of your work. You're very busy, and you find yourself in many parts of the world. What are you excited about in 2025?
I have to warn you, I'm an optimist. I think you may know this. And so I always have a lot of hope and excitement for the future. Next week, we'll be launching our purpose report. And we will share a bit of what we've done over the last year. And in particular, we'll talk about the number of learners that we trained, which this year was 4.7 million, which is amazing. But I take something like that, and when I look forward, I want to ensure that the learners are getting the training on AI. I want to use AI in how we train so that I can, you know, maybe for the first time become more customized. It's a fascinating thought that you could be customized for 5 million learners. But I think the technology will allow us to do that. And so that's something that I'm really excited about. I think the skills and capabilities dialogue this coming year is going to shift a lot because it has to. Yeah. I think if we do it right, it can be really, really good for people everywhere, not just our employees. And the reason for that is I think it'll make it easier for people to understand what they need to get particular jobs. And I think some of the skill jumping for folks that have that interest and passion could lead to really great careers. And so I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity there as well. From a Cisco perspective here on the continent, we had released our cyber resilience report, I think about 6 months ago now. We are now launching a report on AI and how AI can support smart cities. And then what I'm looking forward to is we have a third one coming out about the power of the public-private partnerships. And my hope is when we launch that, we can kick off a set of partnerships on some of the topics that we share today that are meaningful. I have so much optimism for the growth and opportunity here on the African continent. And I've been inspired and blown away by what's possible. And so for Cisco, the ability for us to really lean into these digital projects that have tremendous impact and create tremendous business opportunities is really a priority. And so I think there's a lot of exciting things ahead of us in 25.
All right. So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been just a great one, understanding from Fran what's actually happening in the universe of, you know, universe of Cisco. And you almost feel like you're scratching the surface a little bit because of how, you know, wide, varied and big, you know, a company like Cisco is 40 years on, spending quite a bit of time talking about AI and how pervasive that particular technology has been to all the different aspects you know, of life at Cisco, but more importantly, life in business as well as in government. And that is informing a lot of discussions that are being had right now. Also just, you know, talking about the policy environment and, you know, what are some of the movements that are being had there. Fran giving us some insight to say there's actually, you almost have to take both, a proactive and reactive approach, because you can't always anticipate everything and you can't always get ahead of everything. Sometimes you let, you know, you have to progress and let, you know, things catch up over time. But also, you know, insights around how the discussions around ethics, governance, and that type of thing are being informed by AI, how attitudes of, you know, people around AI are changing, you know, over time. Also great, you know, to hear that someone like Fran is sitting, she's playing around with the different AI tools and, you know, making use of them in her life. She says you can't have time for everything, but you have to try and prioritize as much as possible, you know, what's there. And then giving us some insight as well into things that she's looking forward to in the coming year, such as there's, you know, purpose, the purpose report, you know, smart cities report, you know, as well as, you know, just seeing how people's attitudes have changed even just in the last year. Who knows what the next conversation we're gonna have, you know, with Fran is going to be looking like. And then obviously talking about the relationship with the US, the upcoming administration, but she's firm in saying that, you know, whatever's happening on that end, as Cisco, they're quite bullish about the African continent. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Fran Katsoudis. She is Executive Vice President, as well as you know, the Chief People Policy and Purpose Officer over at Cisco. Fran, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.